business of the morning is number 013384, the United States against William Tully.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Charles Stewart, and I represent the appellants in this case, and this is an appeal not of the underlying criminal conviction of Mr. Tully and several other defendants in the district court in Hammond, but has to do with a claim that was filed by the appellant and counterposing that a claim of restitution or order of restitution that was entered by the district court at the conclusion of the criminal case. Very briefly, factually, in October of 1994, a corporation by the name of Balmco conveyed a piece of real estate in Tippecanoe County, specifically West Lafayette, Indiana, to Connie I. Waters. Mrs. Waters was one of the wife of one of the defendants in the criminal case, that being Donald L. Waters. And she was also the incorporator, registered agent, and secretary of a corporation by the name of Mallard Marketing. Between September of 1994 and March of 1995, the claimants, my clients, invested approximately $157,000 to Donald Waters. So Mr. Waters was the president of Mallard Marketing, Inc., and they invested it for the construction of a home, of a house that was going to be located on the piece of property that was owned by, had been conveyed to Mrs. Waters in October of 1994. In return, Mr. Waters, on behalf of Mallard Marketing, Inc., signed and delivered promissory notes to the claimants, wherein Mallard Marketing, Inc. promised to pay the principal sum of the notes with 10% interest, and the notes were secured by mortgage liens on the real estate if the notes were not paid in a timely manner. At the time that the claimants made these financial investments to Mr. Vauder as president of Mallard Marketing, Inc., they reasonably believed that Mallard, Inc. was the owner of the property. I say that because, number one, as I indicated, Connie Allvouters, who held supposedly legal title to the property, was the incorporator, secretary, and registered agent for Mallard Marketing, Inc.
Well, you're challenging the validity of Mallard, then.
What?
Then Mallard is just a hollow corporation. You want to pierce the corporate veil, then, wouldn't
well,
you?
Well, what I want to do, and what was ultimately done in the district court, when Mr. Waters was sentenced, or when he pled in April of 1998, and this is in the government's brief, he stated under oath, "I agree that I was the true owner of the property in question." I'm paraphrasing that, and that any other names appearing as owners or joint owners are only nominees. And he stated that under oath, and that's why the district court had authority, because this property was ultimately the property that the my clients invested in. Mallard Marketing, Inc. constructed a house on the real estate. The real estate then was subsequently sold pursuant to district court approval, and it sold for, I believe, approximately $251,000. Okay. The district court then, at the plea hearing of Donald L. Waters Jr., he had to acknowledge and he had to state that he was the legal owner of the property. Otherwise, the district court, if Mrs. Waters was the true owner of the property, would not have had authority to make the restitution order apply to those proceeds, because Mrs. Waters was not a defendant in the criminal case.
Well, now, do you agree that as a result of the lien, do you agree that the government's lien is valid?
I believe it is valid as to when it was entered.
Right.
And it was entered in
obviously subsequent
February of 1999.
What other liens of record exist on that property?
I'm not aware. I believe there I believe there was one other, or there is a mortgage lien, and I'm not sure to what entity was granted a mortgage lien. What
spirit of the government?
If it was entered, if it was perfected prior to the entry of the government's lien in February 1999, it would be superior. That's what we say. We also submit that the appellant's liens or equitable liens were created during the time in which, one, they invested the money and in which they were not repaid, which was 1994 to 1995, okay, which was prior to the entry of the government's restitution lien pursuant to statute at the time of the defendant, at the time of Mr. Waters' sentencing in February of 1999. Now,
wait a minute. Now, isn't the origin of an equitable lien when there was a land contract and the purchaser is paying it off, and then, say, halfway through, the purchaser comes on hard times and can't pay anymore, and under the contract, the seller can just take the whole land back? And didn't the courts then say, no, there's an equitable lien in at least the amount or some of the amount that the purchaser paid in? Isn't that the origin of the equitable lien?
Well, that may be one form of the equitable lien. And
what authority do you have for this form? Because I don't see any.
Okay.
Other than it ain't fair.
Okay. I would cite to the court's attention, and it's in our brief, the Lakeshore Bank case, which is an Indiana appellate court case, that held that where a positive duty is imposed on the mortgagor to nurture the benefit of the mortgagee, the mere existence of the duty is sufficient to impress upon the proceeds of any policy taken out by the mortgagor an equitable lien in favor of the mortgagee.
Well, who's the mortgagor?
Well, the mortgagor, the person, would be Mallard Marketing, Inc., or Donald Waters as president of Mallard Marketing, Inc.
Well, first of all, neither of them own the property.
Well, it's unclear.
Of record.
Okay, admittedly, the legal record states that Connie Waters owned the property.
Connie had gone to the bank and borrowed some money to get some furniture or something on a home equity loan or something, she's a sole owner, they get a title search, they find, and they give her a loan and take out a mortgage. That would certainly be superior, wouldn't it, to this equitable lien?
Depending upon when that took place.
No, after this agreement, okay. After they gave the money for the house. The house was built.
If it was after the house was built, I think it would be would not be superior to the equitable lien of the claimants. Because
you think that the equitable lien is created simply because your investors, the money your investors put into this, went into the house. It was built on the property, and that creates this equitable lien, even though there's nothing of record, and there appears to be no recorded instrument of any kind that would have a lien on there.
I would submit that the promissory note in this case stated quite specifically that Mallard Marketing, and we have to realize that Mallard Marketing was Connie Waters and Donald Waters. Donald Waters was the president, Connie Waters was the secretary, registered agent, and incorporator. The promissory notes stated quite specifically, if these promissory notes are not paid back with the appropriate interest on the due date, the Mallard Marketing, through the Waters, will file a mortgage on behalf of the claimant. That was never done. That was fraudulent on the Waters' part, and they owned Mallard Marketing.
It's a fraudulent promise, obviously.
Okay. You know, I would also cite to the court's attention another case that I cited in my brief, the Bahar versus Hydro case. It's a 1973 case where the Indiana Court of Appeals held that equity recognizes a lien which is based upon general considerations of justice between the parties. Such a lien may result from implication from a duty resting on the owner of the property, and the lien is completed by equity pursuant to the maxim that is deemed done ought to be done. Now, the situation we have is my clients invested $157,000 to Mallard Marketing, Inc. through the Waters, who were Mallard Marketing, Inc., on the promise that they would be paid back or that mortgage liens would be filed.
Was the consideration under these notes something other than a 10% interest?
I believe it's the principal sum plus 10% interest. And if that didn't occur, then a mortgage lien would be filed. None of that occurred. None of that occurred. And what happened was, and why we believe that there's an equitable lien in this, if my clients had not invested in this property, number one, the property would not have been improved. A house would not have been built on the property. Two, the house would not have been sold, and there wouldn't be over $250,000 sitting in the district court clerk's office on this case other than for my client. And that's what equitable lien reaches. Now, I'm sorry.
Mr. Stewart, your time has
expired. Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Clifford Johnson. I'm Assistant United States Attorney, and I'm representing the United States in this case. I think that Judge Mannion hit upon a point that ought to be said here. What is fair and what is legal are often two different things. Unfortunately, this is a case where you're dealing with two groups of victims, all fighting over a limited fund, neither not sufficient to pay either group. In this particular case, we have Mr. Stewart's clients who were persons who invested money with Mallard Marketing. We also have restitution victims who are protected by the government's lien. The government's position is that its lien interest is superior to that of Mr. Stewart's client. That might not be fair, but that's the legal analysis here. Before getting into the argument, I would want to bring to the court's attention the vehicle by which this matter was presented to the district court, and I believe that's important. The parties had an opportunity to have a hearing in front of the district court where they could have presented whatever evidence they wanted to present, evidence which would have supported claims piercing the veil, showing that Donald Valters and Mallard Marketing were one and the same. That wasn't done. Instead, the parties submitted a statement of uncontested facts, which were the factual basis for the court's legal ruling. And that's why I'm somewhat puzzled by the standard of review cited by the appellants, which deals with an abuse of discretion dealing with the court's evidentiary rulings. There were no evidentiary rulings. The court had a set of undisputed facts. So this, from the government's point of view, really is just a legal standard, a de novo review. And those de novo review are on two issues. Do the appellants have any lien upon either the property or the proceeds? And secondarily, if they do have a lien, what's the priority of their lien vis-a-vis the government's lien that arises? No one disputes as a result of the order of restitution. We don't dispute that our lien arose in 1999 when the Donald Valters was sentenced and the court entered an order of restitution for $5.7 million. We believe the district court correctly analyzed both of those issues, finding that the Valters claimants, that's the general term that we use, that was used for them, simply did not have any claim, legal or equitable.
Under Indiana law, can you just explain what there is such thing as an equitable lien, isn't there?
There is a thing as an equitable lien. Doing this research was very interesting to me. That is usually in the context of a vendor's lien. That's one form of an equitable lien where someone is selling another party property and the person doesn't fully pay the complete purchase price at the time of the transaction. In equity, the court will create an equitable lien to protect the seller for that part that wasn't paid. It's important to...
Also called a purchase money mortgage.
Correct. It's important to recognize that most of those cases that deal with equitable liens deal with the relationship between the primary parties and don't really deal with what happens when you have a third party, such as the United States. The United States wasn't a party to the transaction between Mallard Marketing and these claimants when the $157,000 was lent, which we don't dispute was used to build a house. Another concept that the government believes that even if this court found that they did have some type of state law interest that you could claim as an equitable lien, the question of priority would be governed by federal law. The government lien is treated the same as a federal tax lien, which brings in the concept of whether their lien was co-ed. It's not purely just a matter of first in time, first in right. Here, these plaintiffs, these appellants, never did anything to make their interest of record. The issues dealing with with the concept of co-edness come to 3 points. Do they ID the liener, the property? Does it identify the subject of the property that's subject to the lien and the amount due? Well, here we have persons who have a promise to give a mortgage. So they have a promise to be litigated. There's really nothing ever
unperfected.
It's very unperfected. We would cite the court to USA versus the city of New Britain. So there was never anything in the title record which would have shown their interest. For all we know, they could have litigated their claim about this promise which they rely on in the promissory note, and they could have lost it. So the equitable lien would never have attached to this particular property or the proceeds from the property.
Is there any state law that you know of that describes when an equitable lien, which of course is one that is not perfected,
mm-hmm.
basically, or one that is from something else other than a record where someone looking at a title search would see it, that it would take superiority over a validly recorded lien?
No, I'm unaware of it. And that's another undisputed fact in this case. These persons, counsel said that they reasonably believed. Well, the government would say their belief was unreasonable in the sense that they did nothing to determine who owned the property at the point that they loaned the money. They did not.
But even if the belief were reasonable, it wouldn't affect the government.
And even if it was reasonable, you're correct, it would not affect the government. There have been plenty of people who reasonably believe that someone was selling them beautiful property in Arizona only to get a patch of sand out in the desert. But these people did nothing to determine who owned the property. If they would have done a title search, they would have seen that Mallard Marketing, the entity with which they dealt, never owned title to the property. It was owned by BAMCO before it was sold to Connie Walters, and then it was owned by Connie Walters. So they essentially got a promise from an entity that never owned the property.
Well, of course, they loaned money without getting a secured interest.
Plus, they did not at that point. I don't know why they didn't demand a mortgage at that particular point in time. They could have gotten it, but there are some counsel wants to read in some language into the promissory note that really doesn't exist. When you read the promissory note, it doesn't say that Donald Walters will record a mortgage if the loan is not paid. It just says if the loan is not paid, a mortgage will be granted of even date that will be recorded. It doesn't say who does it. For all I know, he could have written the mortgage, given it to these claimants, and they never recorded it. It doesn't say who had a duty to do what. They would have us believe that all of these duties were on Donald Walters, but the document clearly doesn't say that. So to the extent that they're relying on that document as the basis for their equitable lien, it doesn't clearly articulate, doesn't clearly state what the expectations of the parties were, who had the duty to do what. So unfortunately, the government's position has to be, when you go through the legal analysis here, that its lien interest, which arose as a result of the restitution order, is superior to that of these claimants. That doesn't make the government particularly happy, but you have a limited pool here, and that's the legal analysis. Perhaps if this were strictly an issue of fairness, there would be a different analysis. But purely as a matter of law, and what when you go through the legal analysis, it's clear that the only viable interest or lien against the property, the amount that's on deposit with the clerk of the court, is the lien of the United States. Unless there are any other questions, I'll rely on my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Your time, sir, had expired. Therefore, the case will be taken under submission with our thanks to both counsel. The next case of